I'm going to give some quick instructions on how to get a blog up and running for free, F-R-E-E, in less than 15 minutes.
Great. Okay. Thank you so much, Joan. Steve, one for you. This was from an artist saying, if there was one way for me to increase traffic to my site, what would it be?
Oh, okay. The question I had seen was recognition, but I'm thinking traffic, if there's one way. Well, this is what's interesting about this question. It's the fundamental artist dilemma, is that you think you can do one thing that's going to solve all your problems. And my experience with search engine traffic is it's incremental. Mm-hmm. And so you sort of have to pick, and probably everybody's seen, I think I did an ebook of 27 ways that you distributed, 27 ways to get traffic. But to take the different pieces that are going to work for you, let's say you take 5 or 10 different strategies and work on them. I think blogs, that's a great strategy. The eBay strategy is a good one, but I don't think they apply to everybody. Probably there are many artists on this call that their market just doesn't look for their kind of work on eBay. So that might not be a great fit for you. But something else might be a good fit. It might be search engine positioning on key phrases. I got to say, unfortunately, you have to customize it to yourself as an artist. What are you creating, and how people who are interested in the kind of work you do, where are they looking for it? And I could see for some artists, if you're having a show and you want to pay for an advertisement in Art in America, that may be a great place to go. You're probably talking about collectors who have pretty fat wallets in that case. Is this making sense, what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So, go ahead.
Do you have more you want to add?
Well, the tough thing is with artists is that many of these things seem extremely technical and that you may not be able to execute them. What you've got to do is sort of survey what the different options are out there and then figure out what's a good fit for you. In other words, are you going to continue to write your blog a couple times a week or not? And figure out what's good for your personality and then do it, and do it consistently.
Yeah, the consistent pieces, Molly was talking about that also. We might get bored with it, but other people don't, and the consistency allows it actually to be streamlined, so we don't have to put as much energy into it each time around.
Right.
Molly, you've got one coming up, dear. Here's one artist, which she wrote me. She said, I get really good reviews from people when they see my work, and I could probably do a better job at self-promotion and maybe figure out how to clinch the deal, but instead I walk away feeling disappointed with another lost opportunity and wondered if I should just pack it all in and go back to what I did before. Cold calls are very hard for me to do, and I don't do them well.
This is so great, and I love particularly the Freudian slip here. She has clinched the deal, C-L-E-N-C-H. Clinch the deal. And I can just see her clenching her jaws, clenching her body as she tries to work through this. Mm. So again, make friends with those icky feelings that you want to get rid of. One thing that I notice here is that she's getting good responses. So I have to wonder if she is aware that she owes it to the gallery owner, the art patron, the viewer, to take in their responses. You know, as an artist, you want people to see your work. They want you to hear their response.
Ah.
So receive it. Before you go to the business, receive the appreciation and pay attention. This will help you have conversations with other people. I hear artists saying, well, I don't want to blow my horn. The way to do that graciously is to say, you know, at my last show, several people told me that what really drew them to this work was the use of color, or what really caused them to buy was, it could be even something that to you is not important, it fit over their sofa. That's really extreme, but what I'm getting at is when you receive what people say, they say, it makes me feel warm. You know, I find this piece unsettling, and yet I find I can't stop looking at it. And when you can report those kinds of responses, you're giving people a window into your work. You're validating their own responses or giving them something to compare them with, and you're letting them know you got the message. Now that you've graciously received the message, if you're talking to a gallery owner, you say, what's the next step?
Excellent.
That's all you have to do.
Excellent.
You make it about them. Just think of the tennis ball. Just keep bouncing it back. How would I do that? Where would you like me to begin? What do you need?
And I want to just add a quick note here, because as you were talking, I realized something that artists also tend to not do, which is to take their own thoughts seriously and to heart. And what I encourage you to do is every time somebody makes a positive comment or even a negative comment about your work, that you have a just cheap little spiral ring notebook hanging around and you write it down. And that those two things, one is you don't have to keep wondering if you can remember what people are saying to you. It'll be there for you. And once you get it down, you can kind of let it go because it has a place to live.
I love that.
Steve, I've got one for you.
Another?
This artist said that they needed to update a good mailing list from past clients, but they found it so difficult to keep an email list because they change so much. How do they keep a list and be successful at it? That's got about three parts to it, I think.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, the natural inclination is to try something like that on your own. So if you have Outlook or Entourage or something like that to maintain your own list and then try to send things out through those programs. And as many of us have discovered, that that's becoming increasingly difficult to do because there are all kinds of spam block things that are stopping us from sending out multiple email addresses.
Right.
Fortunately, at the same time, there are a whole host of services out there that will maintain your email list for you very easily. And many of you have probably heard of Constant Contact. I know that there are people, I think some of our panel members use Constant Contact. I use it with many clients. And the nice thing is that it's really simple. You don't need a technical person to help you with it.
Right.
And in addition to maintaining your list, what you can do is put just a little form on your website, and then automatically people get added to that list. So it's not like people send you an email and then you have to manually add it. It all becomes automated. And then if you send out your email newsletter or whatever it is, they can unsubscribe automatically if they want. They can forward it, and there's an easy way for people to subscribe. So it's really quite easy to do and to manage. And Constant Contact offers a free trial. And actually, if your list is very small, it still won't cost you anything. But let's say you get to a certain size, it may cost you $35 a month, which will probably be worth it in your time.
Right. If you build up a substantial enough list, you can do that. There's also a service called ListMail Pro that's not quite as sophisticated and glitzy as Constant Comment, and it takes a little more technical knowledge, but the person who runs it is really good and available very easily. So,
yeah. And I mean, and they're also very high-end lists, too, that services, if you're sending out 27,000 emails, and
right.
Probably Constant Contact isn't what you want in that
right.
case.
This is for beginning startup work.
Mm-hmm.
And so notice that, you know, notice where you feel like you're at the beginning and want to just start up and when you need to jump off.
Constant Contact's a great place to start. Or I'm not familiar with the one you just mentioned.
Yeah, I would say Constant Comment if you've just got a handful, 50, 100, couple hundred, 500, that's probably the best place to start too.
And we're saying different things. You're saying Constant Comment. And I'm saying Constant Contact.
I'm sorry.
Constant,
you're right. I'm
that.
Wrong.
I think the comment is the T, but I'm not sure. I'm always confusing them.
No. Listen to Steve. Don't listen to me. Adam, here's one from an artist that said, I feel pretty isolated always working in my studio cut off from other artists. What are one of the advantages of artists coming together? What kinds of benefits could we have pooling our resources?
Well, the first thing about doing that is hopefully the isolation factor would go right out the window. But artists collaborating can mean a lot of different things. Ariane, you just mentioned getting, you know, constructive criticism about your work, opening up your work to other artists can help you with that. It can help you interpret or reinterpret your work even for yourself. So it can affect you creatively on one level. You might even wind up collaborating with another artist on a piece, which brings your work to a whole other level. You know, and it doesn't even have to be the same art form. Millions of people are doing multidisciplinary artwork now. And so you might find out your artwork works in a million different ways and can be used and seen by a million different people who enjoy different types of art. So it can affect you creatively, and then it can help you with the business aspect of your work. It can help you network, as I said before. You know, it can expand the people in who are your patrons who are coming to see your work. It can just knowing one other person or one other artist can expand your network so much. And it also might help you get your work out there. This person might know someone or might have been seen at a gallery before, might have had a showing at a gallery, and can help you get your work there. Friends of friends, always you always have to work those connections. It even might help you financially with your work. Those patrons of the one person might begin donating to your work, and it can build upon that. And you can build your mailing list, and you can build a web presence. There are so many different levels that it can work on. It's never ending, and it's just like MySpace. You know, there are tons of musicians, for example, on MySpace who have their music up, and there are a lot of artists as well that have their artwork up, and it's been mentioned before. But it's all about making those connections and working on different levels, and it can affect you creatively, financially, spiritually. There are just so many different levels. I can't even begin, but I think I'll be talking about it in the panel that I'm doing next week.
Okay,
so,
excellent.
You know,
thank you.
Yeah.
Great. Thanks, Adam. Joan, for you, this artist said, I've been working for over a decade and developed some good relations with local media over that time, but how can I break into larger market and make a contact with journalists and reviewers who cover art events for the national media?
Okay, first of all, I'm very pleased to hear that this artist has started developing good relationships locally. That's really important because it's giving her or him a lot of experience on how to deal with media at smaller media outlets before you hit the big time. This particular artist said they have developed some good relationships. So my advice is to do whatever you did to develop those relationships at the local level, just do the same thing at the national level. And let me tick off a couple of things to do to build good relationships with media people. I think the first thing is to let them know that you are familiar with their work before you contact them. This is so important. Let's say there's an art columnist for a particular magazine. I want you to read that columnist's work for the last, like, read the last 6 or 8 columns that they have written so that when you contact them for the first time, you can refer to something that they have written in one of those columns. I guarantee you that if you start out the conversation by saying something like, you know, Sally, I've been reading your art columns in Us and Such magazine for about, you know, the last 6 months, that's going to immediately get their attention and their ears are going to perk up because they're going to be waiting to see what comment you have about their work. And it's also going to let them know that you're savvy enough to read their stuff because a lot of people would not take the time to do this. They will just call a journalist and start pitching. And when I worked at newspapers and I heard a pitch from somebody, I could tell within 5 seconds whether or not they had read my paper and whether or not they knew what was in it. So read their stuff. Next, a great way to build a relationship with journalists and reviewers is to ask them the question, how can I help you? It's such a simple question, but not many people ever ask that question.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
There may be specific types of artists they're looking for to review. And if they say to you, well, you know, you can help me. I happen to be looking for artists who specialize in glass mosaics. Do you know of any? And if you happen to know of a couple of artists and you pass the information along to that reviewer, that's going to position you as a golden source. And even though that information might not help you get publicity, you've just established yourself as a great source, and that reviewer or journalist is going to come back to you again and again. So start building relationships. Give them story ideas. Tell them about trends in the art world and ask them what they need. And once you find out what they need, give it to them.
All right. Fantastic. Thank you so much, Joan. Molly, this one's for you, my dear. What sort of work would be helpful for me to do around the relationship between getting recognition from those who can support my art production financially and getting recognition from my deeper self? Is there a connection? Hello? Hello?
Hey, I was on mute. Okay. So my first answer is no, there isn't a connection. And the way I find that is that your deeper self, the recognition from your deeper self, is your business. And if you expect or rely on any external source to feed that, you're not really engaging with that deeper self. So in one very real way, there is no connection between getting recognition from your deeper self and getting recognition from those who can support your art production. When you think about it, phrasing it that way even sets up a kind of, I'm menopausal, so I don't have time to look for a better word, prostitution. It's like, what can I sell to these people that I can stand to sell while I really connect deeply with the work I love to do? No. And, of course, there's also the answer, yes, there's a very big connection. And that connection is when you take full responsibility for recognition from your deeper self, when you take full responsibility for deciding to make art, whether you're earning money or not, then you're going to be available to opportunities, possibilities, feedback. You're not going to be defensive, whining, discouraged. You're going to be pleasant to deal with. When you don't need approval, or at least attention, tends to flow your way. It's kind of like banks like to loan money to people who don't need it. We all prefer to give attention and approval to people who don't need it. Mm-hmm. So tell the world, another connection is that when you really deeply recognize your work, now you have something to share with us. But please tell us how it feels, what it's like in human terms, not what you're doing in the latest jargon of the art world. So celebrate the heroic story of your commitment to your art. And instead of complaining about it, it's like, you don't write, you don't call after all I've done, you celebrate it. You say, I love this so much that I work 18 hours a day and some months I don't make a lot of money. And actually, I don't want you saying that because that's buying into a very outdated and unnecessary archetype. But my point is, when you choose to do what you do and you're proud of it, then attention and recognition will come in from the outside.
Oh, fantastic, Molly. I love how you combine the inner and the outer worlds so that there is this sort of recognition of how they are working together always, because so often we just really do focus on the outer stuff and are oblivious to how that inner control panel is actually controlling the outer stuff.
Yeah.
Thank you, dear.
You're very welcome.
Steve, this one is for you. I found this one really quite interesting, actually, and I know that creative people are often creative across multiple modalities, that this one can become tricky for a lot of people who are artists and do more than one thing. So this artist said, I'm first and foremost a sculptor in ceramic, bronze, and stone. So even there, the guy can't stick to one thing. But I also make an income doing pet and wildlife art. How do I go about getting recognition for the different kinds of work that I do on my website?
This is a subject of great debate, and I'll tell you what my opinion is. I feel pretty strongly about it, that if you have different markets for different work, then you need separate websites.
Oh, can I just chime in and say, yes, it's my opinion too.
Yeah, and it's funny is that I find usually when people say, you know, I have a website, you just think, hey, I can put, it's mine, I can put anything I want on it. And
right.
I mean, and sometimes people would say, and I would say that these are two very separate markets. The ceramic sculpture and stone and ceramic sculpture and pet art are very different, and different kinds of people tend to buy those things.
That's right.
And frankly, I think if pet art were your primary thing and you were doing sculpture as well, it probably wouldn't hurt your business. But if you're doing sculpture and then pet art on the side, I think it undermines your market, because it's usually a higher level market for sculpture. That's my opinion about the art market anyway.
Yeah,
so,
I agree.
And so I think you have to be really careful. You find some people saying, oh, and by the way, I'm an astrologer, you know.
right. Can I put it all in one place, please?
I know, it really undermines your professionalism. It really hurts your ability to get galleries, museum shows, and down the line.
And I'm going to go into this a lot more in my little blip next week on websites. But just quickly, I just want to note for the artists listening today that what I see operating here is a misunderstanding about what a website is all about. So people think of websites as a personal thing. It's about them and for them. But a website is the window the world is going to look at and access you. It's the door you're offering the world to walk through. So it really becomes then about who's walking through. And it takes it off of you and puts it on your audience. And that shift in perspective, I think, is as often missing for artists and really critical.
Well, and another piece of it is it's better to have one good, focused website selling one thing, whether it's pet art or sculpture, than it is to have an unfocused website focused on everything.
Excellent. Yeah, good point. Susan, this is for you.
Yes.
This artist wrote that it was hard for her to believe that collectors actually seek out work in venues such as eBay. Why wouldn't they go to galleries who represent artists who carry, quote, star power?
Ooh, okay. Well, these are my observations about that. I have four main groups of buyers on eBay. First are the dealers who buy on eBay. Now, this was an unexpected discovery when I started selling on eBay. But the dealers, a lot of art dealers shop on eBay. And the benefit for the artist is that you don't have to send out your work and hope that you'll get a payment later. You get paid up front. And also they buy, you know, at your set price. And it's a much quicker return on what you get than putting something in a gallery or submitting it to a dealer for him to sell.
Right. And so this is an interesting question for me to just consider. That this is that blurry line I spoke of in the beginning between recognition and getting paid. Because for some artists, the getting paid may not be as important to them as getting recognized. And then they may want to choose a different avenue than eBay.
Absolutely, and I certainly agree with Steve that eBay isn't for all artists, and I'll be going into, when I give my talk individually, about what you should consider very carefully before you start selling on eBay.
Excellent. Great.
But back to the other kinds of buyers that I've found on eBay, that you do get experienced collectors who already have experience buying art, and they have confidence in their own taste and judgment.
Uh-huh.
And also, I tapped into my previous collectors. I sent them all an announcement card when I started selling on eBay.
Hmm. And there's that list again.
Absolutely. But that was my old mailing list, and it was snail mail. And several of those people started buying from me on eBay. And the last group, the fourth group, and I really believe it far outnumbers the groups of established collectors, consists of new collectors, people just entering the art market. And their education, lifestyle, and taste drive their interest, but they're not quite ready for many reasons, financially or experience-wise or whatever, to really go for those star power investments.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore,
right.
Yeah.
They want to get their feet wet.
Absolutely. Therefore, they start to look on eBay and look at it as an entry point to the art market. Mm-hmm. And so I've been really fortunate to tap into that source.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Okay, thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
Adam, this is the last one of this two-minute challenge, and this is for you.
Okay.
And I found this very poignant. This artist wrote, in the past, I've often reached out to other artists with very little success at creating collaborative connections. I'm of Asian descent and highly value cooperation. I have experienced a lot of competition and disrespect when I try to do this. I find it lonely and alienating to keep on feeling like I cannot trust anyone because of past experiences. But I feel a strong need to establish a sense of community and connection with other artists, and I'm just not sure how to go about this.
It's a really great question, Ariane, and one of the things that we're trying to do at Fractured Atlas is develop the community. We're looking in the future to have sort of a MySpace for artists, which will hopefully be great. So right now, I mean, those virtual ways to connect are really terrific. It might limit the amount of person-to-person contact, but at least for me, when I'm sending an email versus cold calling or meeting people in person, it reduces the tension a little. And so you might send 20 or 30 emails out, which is a lot easier to do than calling, and asking people, you know, if they're interested in collaborating or just talking about your artwork and with possible collaboration in the future. Out of these virtual relationships can definitely arise working relationships. But we always have to keep in mind that there are a lot of artists out there that enjoy isolation, but there are also artist collectives out there. For instance, from my time at the NEA, I remember there are quite a few in New Mexico, for instance. That's a random example, but they are out there if you can find them, and I'm sure that some of them definitely have an Internet presence. So if you know how to search through Google, you can definitely find them. There are people out there that do value connection and collaboration. You always have to remember that. And I appreciate that he or she mentions that they're of Asian descent, because in a lot of arts-friendly cities, there are groups that are dedicated towards specific cultures, especially when those cultures are featured prominently in the city's landscape. For instance, there are terrific Asian American cultural alliances in the San Francisco Bay Area, in Minneapolis, in New York. And if you can connect with those groups, even if you're from out of state or from out of the region, if you can connect to those groups, you'll probably find people that are in similar situations, and you'd probably be bound to find something worthwhile.
Fantastic. That's a fantastic suggestion. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Okay, panel, we're done with the two-minute challenge. We're going to move on to the hot seat. This is one artist's story that was told to me, and it gave me permission to use it. And I think it is very appropriate for lots of reasons. Last year, Joseph writes, a New York gallery approached me with an offer of representation. They claimed to have been approached by a collector who suggested they take a look at my work. The gallery liked what they saw and offered me an opportunity to send a portfolio with a possibility of long-term representation. And, of course, I'm thinking to myself, if I were an artist, how thrilled I would be to get this. When I received a letter of acceptance 1 week later, they included a contract asking for $2,000 for them to represent me for the coming year. This included a 3.5-week show with a champagne reception. There were other artists included in the show, and I assumed that they, too, were paying for representation. The show went well. I sold one piece out of the three that I shipped, and was again offered a contract for another year with the same price tag of $2,000. My question is this. Should I consider this authentic representation even though I have paid for it? I realize I'm an emerging artist and it's important to get my name out, but another established artist and teacher said that any legitimate gallery would not have asked for money up front and would take on the task of selling my art. She also said I should check out galleries on the Internet to see what kind of art they sell and find one that sells art similar to mine. I find it all very confusing, and I'm looking for some direction so I can someday make an honest living from what I love to do, paint.
Joan, take it away.
Well, I wish I could say that I could help this artist, but I can't because this is not my area of expertise, and I'm not familiar with the way that galleries work. But I do know that when I saw that $2,000 figure, my eyes about popped out of my head. That is a lot of money, and so I'm going to be listening carefully to what the other experts have to say about this. And I also think, and I'm going to reiterate again, you know, we have mentioned lots of terrific ways that you can get exposure for your artwork for very little time, very little money commitment. So, you know, put your efforts towards some of the things that we've talked about. So I'm going to just let the other experts run with this one, Ariane.
Joan, that's great, but I just want to point out that I think you picked up on an extremely important part of the story, which is that $2,000 price tag. So I think you instinctively felt a red flag there.
Yeah, for me, this is for somebody who doesn't know how the way galleries operate. This doesn't pass the smell test, and
right.
I sometimes get people who email me and say, you know, one of the radio stations said that I can be on as a guest. They'll do an hour-long interview with me, but I first have to pay a $1,000 sponsorship fee to be able to do that. What do you think I should do? And I come back and tell them I would never pay a radio station to be on as a guest. That's called advertising. That's
right.
Not free publicity.
Right, right. It, masquerading as masquerading as
yes.
Free publicity. Steve, what's your take on this?
It's interesting talking about the radio. I had somebody call me with an offer like this for a radio show. We'd like you to do your own radio show. Pay us $5,000, and you have to get your own advertisers, et cetera. Well, it didn't seem like a good deal. But I would say, like everybody, when the $2,000 price tag comes up, I would really start to have questions. But I wouldn't rule this out. It depends on what else they're offering with it. If it looks like the only way they're making money is finding suckers like me to pay $2,000, and I've got to provide my own mailing list and deliver people to the opening and all of that, then I'd say it's a bad deal. But they may have a lot of other things to offer here. In other words, a great location in which my work is going to be shown. They may have a mailing list that they're going to use and send postcards to that's going to be a great promotion for me. So I think you really have to look at the details of this. Unfortunately, not all of us have calls from Herschel and Adler asking us to show there, and that, you know, that it's a great deal for an artist because they know they're going to sell a lot of our work.
So this comes back again to doing your research.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And it's really not hard to see. Say, what are you going to do for me? I mean, for $2,000 is a good amount of money. Say, what are you going to do for me?
Right. But if what they're doing, you would have to spend $2,000 to do,
yeah.
And they're doing it,
mm-hmm.
Then that may be a good trade-off. But the other thing is to do the research and find out more about what's behind all of this.
Yeah, I mean, they might also say, typically a gallery could take 50% or more if they're not charging you. So you're selling, let's say, $10,000 works, and a gallery says, we sell your first work, we're going to get $5,000 of that. Now, this group might say, well, part of the $2,000 is you're sort of covering our risk on this by doing $2,000, so we're only going to take 25% commission for selling the work.
Right, so really find out what the bottom line is in terms of the finances. Susan, what was your thoughts when you heard about this?
Well, Ariane, I'm just astounded at the coincidence, but just yesterday I got a call from a local artist. She called to get my advice about a gallery proposal, and it was word for word like the one you described.
Oh, my goodness.
The two things she mentioned that you haven't was the commission was 40%.
Wow.
After the $2,000, and that she would even be required to pay for shipping her work to the show and returning it.
Oh, wow.
For whatever return there was of anything that wasn't sold. So
right.
I advised her to really do her homework, as the others have said, before she makes the decision, to try to find other artists who had showed with them, not just ones in their promotional material, but others that might have shown with them. Often a gallery's internet site is not up to date. She could go there and see if there are artists listed who have shown recently, and she can contact them.
Excellent.
She should also ask them about the collectors that are attracted to this kind of gallery. With a gallery like this, they may be bargain seekers, rather looking for rising artists whose work is underpriced but not long-term patrons.
Right, right.
This whole situation just smacks of the vanity gallery system, where the costs are minimized for the gallery and shifted to the artist.
Right, right.
Basically, you're renting a wall space or space on the showroom floor, but it's rent.
Right, right.
This may be a necessary step in some artists' careers, but it's often very difficult to realize a profit. The drain on your own funds may actually delay your career development, because your funds are tied up and you don't have them available for more promising strategies.
Good point, Susan. Adam, what was your take on this?
Now, just as an FYI, as an artist myself, I come from a performing arts background and not a visual arts background, but in my world, some of the things you hear about all the time are actors and performers who get calls from quote-unquote agents who say, pay us $2,000 for this photo package, and then we will represent you and send it out. And this is a big no-no in the talent world. I'm not sure what the equivalent is in the visual art world, but at least for talent, you know, if they are out there trying to get you work, then definitely pay them a percentage of what they sell. Pay them a commission. They've done work for you, and they deserve it. But people who want money up front, you should always be wary of. And, you know, we've already said it a few times, always do your research. Talk to the other people. Ask for the other people's phone numbers that are in that gallery showing. Ask for people that have been with that gallery before. Find out from others about that gallery. Find out about other galleries in the area. It's very, very important. And always, before you sign a contract, make sure, if you are not familiar with things that go on in contracts and law and proper etiquette, if you have a lawyer in your family or a friend, have them look it over. If you don't, volunteer lawyers for the arts is a great, great resource. Sometimes it'll take them a while to get back to you, but volunteer lawyers for the arts is terrific. You can find them right online, and they're a pro bono resource. Now, it's different. Like, if you're working with a PR and publicity firm and they are out there trying to get you publicity and doing what they're supposed to do, and you work with them on a specific package, even if they don't get the word out in the end, they have done work for you, and it's okay to pay. Generally, they ask for payment in the end anyway as well, from what I'm familiar with. But always, always, always check with people, and I'd just be very hesitant about putting any money up front for any kind of representation like this.
Great. Thank you, Adam. Molly, what do you think about this little good deal here?
Well, I agree with what's been said, and the one thing that I might add is that as I read this, I pick up a sense from Joseph when he says, I find it all very confusing. It sounds like he's thinking that he doesn't know who to trust. And he doesn't have to know who to trust, because there are questions here that are just begging to be asked. Who's the collector? Call the other artists in the show or email them. Are you paying for representation? Ask around. And, of course, it's authentic representation. You're paying for it. They're representing you. Is it effective representation? You will only know if you ask around. So don't worry about looking stupid. And you shouldn't trust people, and you can't trust people authentically until you have a basis for it. So ask the natural questions and don't feel bad about it.
Oh, that's great advice. Well, panel, that is getting close to wrapping it up today. Oh, my gosh, my head is whirling here. I feel like I wish I had been able to take notes like crazy, and now I'm going to come back and listen to this again. I just can't believe the amount of advice that came through today. And I want to ask the artists listening today, if you are feeling similarly amazed and astounded at how much information came through, just solid, nitty-gritty information, we have a testimonial line. We would love to hear from you. It's this,
871-9012. And the extension you dial is 1959-1 and the pound sign. You can also email info@smartest-telesummit.com and let us know how today was for you. And we are going to be looking so forward to being on the line again tomorrow at the same time, 1:30 Eastern Standard Time till 3 o'clock, for the next panel discussion on getting paid for your art with five more incredible people. Panelists, I want to thank you again. Joan, thank you.
Ariana, it was great to be here.
Adam, thank you.
Sure, thank you, Ariana.
Molly, thank you.
It was so fun. Thank you.
Susan, I'm so glad you got on finally.
Oh, I am too.
Thank you.
This was great, and I'm really looking forward to talking about eBay more.
I know. The rest of the week is just going to be so dynamite. Yeah. I can't believe it. Steve, thank you.
Sure, lots of fun, Ari.
All right. And then before the artists go off the line, I just want to let you know that we still have some seats open. And if you're on the affiliate program, we encourage you to let artists know that, you know, what you experienced today, if you think it's really valuable, that they can still jump in because this is being recorded. They can go back and listen to even today and tomorrow. They will not have missed very much, and they can start in on Monday. All right, everybody, have a great rest of the day, and I'll see you tomorrow. Goodbye.